talking a little bit. Hello, this is Peter Anderson and
Jessica Pacinas.
Jessica Pacinas. Hello, Jessica. We are talking about intimacy, building intimacy in your relationship today. So I'll let you go ahead and get started. What made you want to talk about that today? And
Great question. Yeah, I think it's been coming up a lot, actually. I see it in at least in a lot of the sessions I'm doing, but also I just think it's a topic that's so critical about how do we connect in meaningful and authentic ways. And I think it's multifaceted, right? Because we're talking about emotional intimacy, we're talking about physical intimacy, and it's so unique, especially to every couple. And I think that's where my head was with couples, but honestly, this topic can even be extended to families, right? How do we want to connect in meaningful ways as a family? But for couples, I think where I see it is on different levels, right? So I see it on a friendship level. How are we doing things that we are building this, what I call in some of the trainings we have, is that compassionate mindset, or Gottman calls it that positive sentiment override, things that are really gearing us up to feeling connected and close and setting the stage. Like, I think of it like a dial, right? How are we turning the dial to set the stage for also that physical connection to occur in a relationship? And so looking at maybe different ways of doing that, have you seen this come up for you as well, like in your work as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like how you said, like, looking at it as a dial. Are you mainly looking at intimacy for, like, when you think of intimacy, how would you define that? I would love to,
That's clarify. That's a great question.
You know?
And oftentimes in my work, what I do is I let the couple define it because it's such a different meaning, I feel like, for each relationship. But I think how I would define it is our sense of feeling seen wholeheartedly and accepted wholeheartedly in a way that feels safe and secure, and where there's a level of trust and just that sense of emotional and physical connection.
Nice. I like that.
I don't know if that fits.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because when you get later in life and there are certain people that can't have sex, say, for example, anymore, like, what do you do with that? There's like various issues. I mean, it could be prostate cancer later in life, and then all of a sudden that affects you. Or I know, you know, having a lot of going through menopause that could really affect you. You know, does that mean that those people have no more intimacy? Well, of course they have intimacy, but it's defined very differently. It definitely comes up a lot. There's a variety of issues, you know, looking at building intimacy in our relationship. I would like to also just focus on, you know, the positives, not so much why it's not there, but what are some things that you would do that we could talk to our listeners that we do also that help clients feel when they're really stuck, how they could start improving their intimacy. Do you have any like exercises that are rated at least PG-13 that you can
do? So don't go to my R or not rated.
Sure. It is drinks with shrinks. So if we do have like a later session, maybe we can talk. Yeah, no, go ahead.
Shrinks after dark.
Yeah.
No. So I think it's one of those things where, so again, I look at building blocks, right? And actually, I know I'm going off on a little bit of a side tangent, but I promise I'll loop it back. So this idea of, you know, Emily Nagoski has a lot of work out there, but spontaneous and responsive sexual styles, right? And I think of that on a spectrum. On one end, you have spontaneous, the person who can kind of go whenever, I could be on my deathbed and I'm ready to go. And responsive, who is kind of like, I could, like, you know, you're forever, maybe you're this, what's happening in the context of our week and our relationship individually is all gonna make, is gonna inform whether it's a yes to moving and forward in physical intimacy. And so why I'm bringing that up and tying this back to the building blocks is if we understand our sexual styles, and if one of us is more responsive, even if the other person's not, it's important to understand then what needs to set the stage for that person. And that comes back to focusing on sometimes things also in the relationship, as far as our friendship. Are we scanning for things that we value, that we appreciate, that we admire? Are we taking advantage of opportunities, no matter how busy our week is? It could just be the smallest moment, like where we're overlapping in passing, but we give each other a hug or a kiss, or being really intentional about having some play, sending a flirty text message, or knowing that maybe because I've been checking in with you and I know you've been really overwhelmed, I do a chore that's typically yours, but I do it to free up your plate. And I feel really great about that. Thank you. Right. I'm setting the stage where we're getting closer over the course of however time, over the day, whatever it is. And we're moving toward feeling, building desire, right? We're creating such positive deposits in that emotional bank account that Gottman talks about, where it's really setting the stage for us to engage maybe more physically with each other, and where we're more maybe in the mood to have sex, versus if it's been, you know, really distant and icy and I haven't felt seen or heard or anything like that on top of the stress of my normal week, and you take me out to dinner, I'm probably not going to feel as excited about that with my partner, right? I'm probably like, okay, this one thing feels great, but it's also been not great week, you know, or if you give me that gift, I might say, like, nope, it's not going to be the same response as if we've been in this really loving and intentional space. Yeah. And then maybe that necklace is given or that thoughtful gesture is made. It's going to be received a lot differently.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know how that's sitting.
I do. I like that. I also think that there's a difference in, especially when it comes to heterosexual relationships, where there's a big difference between male attraction and female attraction. But I also, you know, I'm wondering if that's also just maybe personality, because I mean, there are definitely male clients or male people that I, you know, that will, men that I know that are much more tender and sensitive, and they don't like the criticism at all. Mm-hmm. And the minute their wives may criticize them, they just shut down sexually. I used to, if you were to ask me 5 years ago, I might have said, oh yeah, you know, men can just plow right through it. And that's a myth. That's definitely a myth. I think it's very important that couples learn how to speak tenderly to one another.
100%.
And at the same time, though, the other thing that I'm noticing that's very attractive with my clients is direct assertiveness. That's where I think sometimes people get thrown off a little bit. Like if I'm too assertive, my partner may not want to be with me. Quite the opposite. I know I'm turned on actually when my wife is very assertive, not aggressive, but just like assertive. This is what I want and this is what I need from you. And I'm like kind of throwing, I'm like, hey, babe. You know, it's just nice. You know, she tells me exactly what she's feeling and she's telling me what she needs and she's being very direct. And say, for example, maybe I'm not being as considerate with her time. And, you know, I need that kind of self correction or that correction to me, and that helps. That actually makes me want to go to the bedroom. And I think it's with her. I could maybe speak for her as well. But I've also noticed that with a lot of clients. That's why I teach a lot of assertiveness, because when you're being assertive, you know, your partner knows you more. You're repairing better. Your guard is more down, because even if it's a fight, you at least have direction. Yeah. And you often want to end that note on some type of human touch. I will say, with our listeners, if you're wanting to learn on how to repair more, there's a really good principle that DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, offers, which is called Dear Man. Describe, express your emotion, assert your need, reinforce, and then stay mindful, appear confident, negotiate. I'm not going to go into all this right now, but that's a really good little tool that I teach clients on how to work on their assertiveness. Maybe we could also just say, yeah, because I mean, would you say, when we look at building intimacy in our marriage or our relationship, would you say lack of communication is the number one obstacle why there's not an intimacy in your, you know, what you see, or are there a lot of other things that you see as well? And I could talk about that from my end as well.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think communication is part of it, but I definitely see other things as well. Like, I think there's a level of distance and disconnect. I think there's sometimes a level of, I hear a lot, like, we're just roommates. You know, this idea of the friendship even being so maybe jeopardized, where we've just kind of lost the, I look at my partner and there's a very different narrative than one that I might see with a client who has a strong base of that friendship happening, where it's more negative. It's more looking for fault. It's more assuming the negative, even. I'm anticipating before even that conversation starts what will happen. And that's probably even could shut down a lot of conversations from happening, right? Because of those stories that we hold. And so I think there's, and another thing too, is I think sometimes, and I see this with parents, but also if you're not a parent, but you have really busy and demanding jobs and work schedules, it's easy to fall into the excuse of we're just too busy. And I think, while I don't want to invalidate that for people by any means, I think it's also continuing to make connection a priority as well, one that doesn't get sacrificed. Like that.
There's a part of me that's grown impatient with the word "I'm too busy." I will admit, not as a therapist, but as in my own personal life. And I wonder, I try to sit with that because it's an excuse, really. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's not, it's a cop out. And I actually think it's helpful that you just kind of say that for yourself and then get to the, stop bullshitting yourself so that you can get to the actual issue and the problem. I mean, when I say that, I'm BSing myself. I know I'm kind of BSing that person. Really, I'm just not making that a priority and I'm choosing not to. So why am I choosing not to make this person a priority? Oh, that's a hard question. I feel like I'm too, that would make me look too mean. Well, obviously you're saying this to yourself. You're not saying this to her or to him, but you do want to kind of assess that a little bit. Like, why am I too busy to be with this person? What am I hiding from? What am I running away from? You know? So, yeah.
And one of the points you're making too is, I think I'm looking up, if you ever see me looking sideways, that's where some of the books are that I turn to a lot. But one of them that I really love is the Come As You Are book by Emily Nagoski. And she has a
word. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really wonderful, that I use a lot with clients, because the framework of it, what she describes is she talks about brakes and accelerators. Like, what are the things that are the turnoffs, the things that kind of red light versus the things that are accelerators, the things that turn us on, the things that really set, again, the stage for whether it be sex or some level of connection that we're aspiring to. And I think it's something where we don't talk about it. So to your point too, like similar to the busy, we don't talk about sex. We don't talk oftentimes in a very clear and direct way about what we want or what we're comfortable with and what we're not. And that changes over time. What could have been a turn on a year ago might actually be a turnoff now. It's one of those things where I think also circumstances change, interest change, and creating a safe enough space between us. And that's why that friendship piece is so important, to be able to come to the table and say, you know, maybe if we are talking about sex, our sex life isn't like, I'm missing this. And let's talk about, what are some of those breaks for me? What are some of those accelerators for me? Doing that individually and then coming back together and talking it through with each other. So now we're kind of going into our time with ideas of like, oh, I know this is a turn on. Or if there are breaks that we're running into, coming up with a plan for how to disarm them together, like a strategy together.
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful, is to kind of de-taboo it.
Yeah. What was that? De-taboo it? What does that mean?
Yeah. Like, I think sometimes sex is one of those taboo topics. You don't talk about
it. Oh, de-taboo it. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
I think it's kind of like a French term. I was like,
I wish.
Okay. I don't know. Okay. Right. Sure. Yeah.
What do you think?
That's actually interesting that you say that, because I got my training in a seminary, and that was more common in a seminary. And I was in a very conservative part in Mississippi where a lot of high, you know, my strong conservative couples, they would say that kind of stuff. But would you say that's just as true in New England, like with your couples as well? Like, is it almost like a taboo to talk about
sex? I don't know if it's like as strong as a taboo to talk about sex. I think there's been just falling into, we don't talk about it, not for any specific reason.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't also modeled within families or how things were talked about in that way. It's, I think sometimes it can just feel uncomfortable. Like, how do you bring it up? And I think it's more that discomfort that stops it. Not so much that it's like a no, or there's, it's wrapped up in shame. It's, I think it's just uncomfortable sometimes.
I would say, I would, like, one thing that I keep getting, you know, hitting like a, you know, a constant, I would say, concern is people that have been brought up in traumatic or unstable or insecure households. And I see this quite a bit. When they have that secure relationship, their desire all of a sudden plummets. That's pretty common. And it really throws them off because they may have slept with lots of people to earn love, or maybe they're, you know, they were in environments where they felt like they needed to use sex to earn some type of position, or maybe sex was a way to kind of like keep relationships alive, you know, or at least, you know, not alive, but just like going. But now that they have this amazing partner who loves them just for who they are, their desires just plummet. You know, what about those types of people? Because that's pretty common. I'm noticing, you know, that normalcy and being BFFs and being best friends and we love each other.
Yeah.
It doesn't always transfer to like, oh my gosh, I want to just rip your clothes off. Sometimes it's quite the opposite. It's like, the more I get to know you, for certain people, the less the desires are arrive. Do you run into that problem? I know I see it.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess more in the context of trauma.
Yeah. Right,
what you're describing. And I think it's important too to acknowledge also any underlying traumas or things that are impacting how we show up to that relationship. Like that understanding that shift also for ourselves. I mean, what are your thoughts on trauma? I guess in those scenarios that you're describing, how have you approached that when you see that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think there's that's probably a different podcast, but I mean, on that particular, and I was the one that invited it. So I'm going to answer the question anyway. So I would say I really normalize that. I think most people, they could just say, okay, you're not weird. Because they often have a lot of guilt when they're bringing that in the table. They're like, I don't know why. And they're very angry with themselves. So I think we do a lot of work. It's like, okay, this isn't your fault. Right. Let's just sit with that. I know, because you have another part that's probably really shaming. That could actually be highly beneficial, just to realize that, yeah, it's pretty normal. What? It's normal. Yeah. It's pretty normal. To the more you get to know somebody, the more safe the relationship is, your desires to couldn't plummet. Oh gosh, I thought there was something wrong with me. No, with your background and stuff like that, it makes a lot of sense. So I start with that. And then after that, I think just being, this is where I love Gottman's, imperative to always cuddle, you know, the importance of cuddling. I've gotten to, those couples, also sometimes have a hard time just sitting and cuddling, or maybe they do like to cuddle. I don't know. Regardless, if they do like to cuddle a lot, that's a really good sign, because cuddling does often lead to deeper intimacy. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. If they're not into cuddling, I try to help them, or, you know, get to the point where they could at least get used to touch, because trauma is healed really through touch. It's not really through talk therapy. I just got finishing up my certification in the 9-month intensive at the Bessel van der Kolk, you know. So yeah, finishing that. So we do a lot of work on trauma, and you know, what he would say is it's all rooted in the part of the brain that is kinesthetic. That's where it goes back to those memories and heals those memories. So gosh, doing martial arts could be really helpful. Doing dance, doing drama, anything can really bring your body back to its normal place again. EMDR could be very helpful. So anything that is going to bring the body and the mind more together. Because when you think about intimacy, it is a lot like that. It's like our bodies and our minds are one. Even the act of intimacy, you're inside that person, literally. But also emotionally, you know, and physically, and you know what that represents. It's a very bonding experience to be integrated, like as one person. That's a lot. So it's all related to the body and the movement and being comfortable with that. So I think sometimes when people came from a lot of trauma, they're always hiding from their bodies in some ways, or maybe they felt like they had to punish their bodies, or they felt like they had to run. And so if you can get to the point where your body can relax, take things, and often, you know, which this is why it's so good that those people marry secure partners, because those secure partners won't feel threatened if you do need to take some space. I always try to tell people, don't run away from that secure person. If they're not, you know, you want to hold on to them, because they will be extremely patient while you go through this process. But it is a process, and there's a lot of healing as you make, you know, step by step, you know, progress in that. I think if you're with somebody that's very anxious though, or very highly avoidant, and you have that trauma background, and then you start to have that lack of desire, that's going to be very hard for them. They're going to take that, especially the anxious client or the anxious partner, is going to be like, oh my gosh, that means you don't love me anymore. And that's going to put more pressure on the person that may have experienced that to maybe perform, which is going to be this ugly cycle. Whereas if the avoidant, then the avoidance is, oh, it's interesting, because the avoidance actually get turned on when the person says, hey, I need space. But then it becomes kind of, it feels manipulative in some ways. It's like, oh gosh, now you're turned on? Right. And in space, this is weird. And then they kind of perform, but then you get back into a very different type of cycle. So I always say to people, if you're single, look for a secure person. Mm-hmm. If you're married to somebody that may be avoidant or anxious, there's still hope with those people, but your language has to be, and that's where marriage counseling comes in very handy. Like, you want to try to be on the same page that what the space that you're taking is not a threat to the relationship. It's just,
No, I love what you're saying. I think too, sometimes, you know, bearing witness to those conversations, you know, for someone maybe trying to understand also how trauma might show up, or that it's not necessarily about me, but understanding how it affects the relationship when it is present.
Yeah.
And that also might encourage the other partner to participate or offer support in a very different way. Again, that promotes the security and safety to be vulnerable in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think externalizing some of those processes are so important. You know, when we can understand, I guess, leaning into EFT a little bit, but that dance that we fall into, and we're both able to understand it and see it, then yeah, it gives you both power in labeling it, but also choosing to step differently or creating a different meaning around how we're stepping. So that, like, to your point, it doesn't feel manipulative, where we're kind of falling into and identifying other ways we can move, where our needs are still being met, but we're also connecting in ways that are meaningful and authentic to us both.
Yeah. Now, you brought up EFT, which means emotion focused therapy for.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Also,
oh no, I always like to, I caught myself saying EMDR, but I just don't remember what that stands for. So y'all look it up. Eye movement, something, stabilization. So with your training in that, do you center around a lot of feeling and emotion to make sure that they're both connected there? I mean, is that how you build the intimacy with your clients? I was just curious.
Like in more in general, or?
Yeah. So if like Bill and Suzanne are coming and they haven't had sex in 2 years, for example, how would you start with making sure they're both on the same page emotionally, or where would you go with that?
Yeah. So one, and this I would encourage everyone to do too, is you also want to pay attention to anything medical going on, especially if we're talking about sex. You want to, one, make sure you both are checking for any other underlying medical conditions that could be impacting our ability to be physical. Because I think that creates a different conversation too. But yeah, how are we connecting? How do we both feel? So I do kind of go into the past a little bit. I will admit that.
Yeah.
How, what's the story we both are telling ourselves about how we feel intimacy or connection has changed over time? Like, what are we identifying as some of the things as having contributed to that? And where are we now? Like, how do we love, how do we receive love, and how do we want to show, how do we typically show love? And I think looking for areas where there's congruencies, but differences, looking at how those things have changed and really trying to create an understanding of, and this is where I think that spontaneous responsive style spectrum comes in. If you both have different sexual styles, there are going to be a different sets of needs that go along with them. And I think when there's an understanding of what those needs look like, and there are different avenues of meeting those needs that we're aware of, now there's kind of a pathway forward. And I know I'm making this sound really simple in general. I think there's a lot more of in-depth conversations and back and forth, but I think that's kind of, I guess, the premise, I guess, is I think you have to also understand kind of what's contributing to the cycle we've been in and what we're willing and open to now and what we need now to feel close and connected. And that's kind of going to create this other cycle that we are both working toward, but it's something we're both aware of, and we both have a shared understanding of what it looks like to get to that place we want to go. Like, there's a shared goal.
Yeah. I like this. I like the word cycle, because I mean, I think, and I kind of do the same thing with my couples. I mean, I've got enough, a little bit of training at EFT, not quite as much, but reading, read a few of Sue Johnson's books. She kind of talks about looking at your cycle almost like you're a bird, outside, and just what Dan and Suzanne doing? What do they do every day? Gosh, that brings up such a good point, because when you start looking at your own life and you realize, say, for example, if your intimacy hasn't been very prominent, it is pretty easy to like look at the drama that's going on, or the lack thereof, or the lack of problem solving, whatever it is, the cycle that's going on in your life that seems to be contributing to the lack of intimacy. So if it's a typical couple, if they have kids, come home, put the kid down for dinner, especially if it's babies or screaming the whole time and change diapers and poop. And then all of a sudden you just want to watch Netflix for an hour or 2 hours. And then at that time it's like 10 o'clock and you take a shower, but then he's already fallen asleep at the couch. And then you go fall asleep at the bed. And then he scrambles up at about midnight and, from the couch, you're already asleep, and then you wake up and you do it over again. And that's literally that's your life. That's your cycle. And I probably just described about 80% of couples in America with that. where are we missing each other? So instead of just going to the Netflix, how about we cuddle? How about we use this time to 100%. Chill? Hey, it seems like I'm always the one feeding the kid. How about you feed the child for 3 days and I go cook dinner? And, one of the things that my wife and I do, we try to give each other time where we both kind of are away from the house so that we just gather our brains. Such a wonderful love language for the both of us, and then we're just both in better moods. That's okay. So I like that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to, yeah.
Go no, ahead. I love what you're saying. And I think it just was making me think about how, and now I kind of had a moment where everything just went poof, but I'm going to find it. It will come back to me. But it's one of those things, I think too, where you both are individuals, right? And so self-care becomes so important. Oh, and that's where I was going to go, was that I think too, you had mentioned earlier too about cuddling and the importance of touch. And I think sometimes, for example, as a new parent, you might feel touched out, right? And that can create barriers to intimacy. Right. And I think one of the things is going into things without sometimes the expectation. I think couples can put a lot of pressure on themselves too, on the other side of things. And that kind of creates its own self-fulfilling prophecy. And so experimenting with different kinds of touch, not with the purpose of, you know, it being sexual, but just cuddling, mm-hmm. naked cuddling, you know, massage, or using sensate focus, you know, just exploring each other's bodies in an, again, non-sexual way, but just getting to know what feels good, what doesn't feel good. And I think all of those things, again, they're building security and comfort. They also could lead to other things, but it takes the pressure off. It's just having fun with it, about being present with each other in it. And I think that's sometimes important. It's not all touch just has to mean, okay, now we're having sex. It's no, like this can just be it. And that's okay.
Yeah. Also working on humor. I noticed that works. Yeah. Having, you know, I really try to, I've noticed like the couples that probably don't have sex the most is they have very little humor. Where couples have a pretty good sex life. They know how to laugh. They know how to not take themselves too seriously. There's yeah. healthy levity, you know, there's not insulting. I mean, humor can get very insulting, but this type of the humor that I'm talking about is, you know, just fun and picking playful. On each other. Playful. I love the word. Yeah. Yeah. That's very, yeah. Flirting. Flirting is a wonderful word. We don't use that much. It's good to flirt with your partner. Yeah. Flirt with your partner. Yeah.
Send them a text message.
Like yeah, thinking about you and yeah, whatever. So, well, we do have to, I have to, so Jessica and I are going to try to be on. This is, we want you listeners to keep us accountable, every 2 weeks around 2 o'clock. So, we're going to try to keep these nice, short and to the point. But we just really want to thank y'all for listening. Jessica, I don't know if you had any closing remarks and
thank you. And again, if all of you have any topics or anything at all that you want us to touch on, talk more about, send it our way. We're open.
Yeah, I'd love that. We love our listeners. The one or two out there, I'm kidding. You know, we've had a few more.
Yeah, we're building. We're building it.
Oh, anyways, it's like dad, mom, thank you for
Right. Listen to this one, maybe. No, just kidding.
All right. Anyway, okay. But yeah, thanks y'all for listening, and we will hopefully see you in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, see you soon.
All right. Okay.